The successful ones are the ones that evaluate their practices and change them where they need to change them and keep them constant where they should be kept constant. But that willingness to change is, I think, the key.
Ladies and gentlemen, farmers, ranchers, and distinguished guests, thank you for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast, where we discuss the latest ideas, methods, trends, and techniques available to help your farm achieve higher levels of farm profitability. The Farm for Profit podcast is co-hosted by Tanner Winterhoff, the Iowa Bankerman, and David Whitaker, the Iowa Land Guy, where in tandem, they will share their ideas and advice from industry experts. Thank you again for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast. Remember, if you aren't farming for profit, you won't be farming for long. And now, here's Tanner and David.
And welcome back to another Farm for Profit episode of the Farm for Profit podcast. This is Tanner Winterhoff.
And this is David Whitaker. And we sure appreciate you taking time to spend with us and choosing to listen to our podcast. Thanks again for suggesting topics about our podcast, and send any of those if you have any new suggestions to farm4profitllc@gmail.com. And find us on all the social media outlets as well. Tanner, we have a great listener review this week.
Oh, yeah.
Who's it from?
High school buddy of mine and a really good friend, Kyle Glinky. He said, "Your episodes are timely and informative. Always great content that is engaging, timely, and informative." Oh, wait. He said that already. So thank you, Kyle. And we will keep up the good work. Really appreciate the review. All you listeners, thank you for leaving us these messages. It's fuel for us to continue to get some fire in our belly to do these episodes for you. Hopefully, we can continue to bring some more value to you. But one of the ways we can do that is with these advertising partners. So thank you to BW Fusion for partnering up with us this spring and talk to us about their microbial products a couple episodes back. If you go to our website, farmforprofit.com, you can check out their offer. You sign up to use some of their products, put some of their products in your operation. There's a potential you can get $2,500 in credit back just by saying Farm for Profit.
And Tanner, this is the last week that they can sign up, correct?
Yeah, I'm hoping to get them to extend it, but you're not going to want to wait very long. So for this part of the BW Fusion relationship with the podcast, we want to make sure we get these spring products in your hand. Go out to the website, look for them, use Farm for Profit to get the maximum offer.
And Tanner, just like every week, we kind of start with what's working in ag. And this week we have getting your equipment ready, but we're going to talk about record keeping a little bit.
Yeah, just like we were kind of talking about on the last episode, that the equipment is a main focus, but we can't forget about our data. So thanks to Granular, we're ripping off some of the content that they've put together for their subscribers to put on the episode for us. We have Robbie Weathers with us. He is part of the agronomic support specialist team. He's been with Granular for 2 years and is a graduate of Clemson University. Welcome, Robbie.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having us this afternoon.
So, Robbie, tell me, what's your tie to agriculture? Of course, you work with Granular and whatnot, but where do you live? Where are you from? And how are you involved in ag?
So I live down here in South Carolina, grew up farming. My father still farms about 800 acres, cotton, corn, soybeans. Kind of depends on the prices in the year, what we do on a rotation. But I got out of Clemson in 01, got started in precision ag, and kind of been doing it since then, worked with multiple companies, co-ops, and consulting.
Perfect. You said South Carolina or North Carolina?
Yeah, South Carolina.
Well, you guys probably are starting planting right about now.
We have guys itching. If it wasn't too wet, they'd already be in the field.
Nice. So with these wide variety of farmers that you work with, what is the wide variety of record-keeping styles that you've seen?
Oh, everything from the good old notepad in the shirt pocket to the Excel spreadsheet on the computer to a few of them actually know how to get varieties right in a monitor, and we read records off and read data off. So, yeah, it comes down to a lot of them, but it seems like more and more as we're getting into these systems, we're getting the records put into the monitors and storing it that way to get true, accurate counts of where we're putting things and what totals we're putting out.
Okay, so if we are working on getting our planter ready, we've got all of our tillage greased up, lubed up, ready to go. What should we be doing to get ready this season on our data management front?
So the first thing I always tell guys to do is if you're running variable rate, let's go in and clear out all the old prescriptions that you've got in there so you don't get confused when you get to the field.
Okay.
While you're doing that, kind of refamiliarize yourself with that monitor, the operation of it, because it's probably been 4 to 5 months since you've touched one, and especially planting has been about a year. So go back in, learn how to load your fields up, get your AB lines up, load your prescriptions, how you put varieties in, and then clean up those old ones so you don't get confused.
So that makes a lot of sense, because I hadn't really thought about it in the grand scheme of things that it is. It's going to be about a year since the last time we played around with this equipment to make sure that we understand, because I assume you're going to want to start off with the most accurate information as far as record keeping goes, and that starts with planting.
Correct. And if you, especially since it's, if it's been updated in that time, the buttons may be in a different place. The workflow may be a little different. So it's a whole lot easier to figure this out sitting in the shed than when you got the tanks loaded up with seed and fertilizer and you're trying to get everything going in the field and everybody's looking at you.
Robbie, is there any kind of firmware updates that I assume the farmers, we just assume that they have that done, any software updates? You talked that the buttons might have moved, so I'm guessing they moved if somebody updated the software.
Yes. So in different firmware versions, different updates, sometimes the operating process do change in the monitors. So make sure you familiarize yourself with what you've got in that monitor before you get in the field.
Okay. So I'm thinking about an entire team. So if I'm getting ready for the field, obviously I'm not very often anymore in the world of farming is the same guy preparing the seed bed that's also planting the crop. So what are some tips that you could give our listeners about making sure that their team is all on the same page?
So the best thing I've seen is kind of standardize your naming process ahead of time. So if you're going to put the varieties in, make sure if they're putting in Pioneer, they're putting in a capital P. So one guy could put in a capital P, another guy could put in a lowercase p. And when that comes into your data software, those come in as two separate varieties because they're named differently.
Okay.
So at least try to get everybody on a standardized naming for your hybrids that you're going to put out there.
Tanner, I got to think field naming might be important too.
That's true.
If your dad always says that's, you know, the windmill farm because it had an old windmill that isn't there anymore. Because it got tore down by the derecho or something, we might need to rename the field as, you know.
Or at least make sure the new guy knows that that's which field it is.
Yeah.
I'm glad y'all give directions on things that hadn't existed in 30 years also, like we do down here.
So do you advise giving like creating work orders and saying we're going to go to this field, we're going to plant this hybrid? What's your advice there?
Yeah, if you're going to plan that out ahead of time, yes, that is a good way to do it. Get the work order system set up. Say, okay, here's what you're going to go to this field with. Here's what we're going to try and get there with in the hopper. Or here's what the seed you need to take instead of letting them grab the first thing they see when they go into the warehouse.
So they're probably doing this in their house or in the shed long before they ever drove down the road or went and picked up the seed. How far ahead of planting do we need to get this done?
So a lot of that's going to depend on your weather conditions and your timing. So normally a lot of guys will do this a few weeks ahead when they've got a better idea of what their field rotation is going to be, where they're going to go kind of based on the weather, how they're going to cycle things out.
Nice. And that would make sense as to why we're going to do that closer to the planting date rather than to try and set this up in December or January in Iowa and maybe a lot of things change, potentially even what crop's going to go in that field. So still good to do it ahead of time, but not necessarily months ahead of time.
It's good to have a general plan, but have it where you can put some flexibility into it. So as the weather conditions change, you can go and jump around.
We started off by talking about the guy with the notepad in his shirt pocket, yep. And I'm sure that's effective. I know that it's been done that way for a long time, but if we know who you work for, so let's go to the digital record keeping and digital farm management tools that we have. What is the advantage of using a digital tool like that in season? Are there ways to really evaluate and maybe make changes, or what do you see as the advantage of using that?
So being able to keep track of your hybrids. So if you're getting into a program where we're looking at scouting, we can know, okay, this hybrid characteristics. We've got a digital record we can pull up in the field. We can see what variety was there, where the varieties are at, know the characteristics on them. We're getting into like dry down equations, GDUs. We get a better idea of what's going on to make those decisions based on what those characteristics are.
Because I think I saw a testimonial on the website. One of the things that I thought was quite interesting is potentially eliminating mistakes. And I like what you're saying about making sure everybody labels everything the same, which yep. is huge. But I'm sure it cuts out the mistakes in a lot of different ways, Dave.
I think it would. Robbie, I got a question for you that just ties right into what Tanner was just asking. And that if we're making mistakes, you know, computers only do what we tell it to do. So it only yep. goes on the information that it gathers. Is there anything we need to do to make sure it's gathering the right information, or what can we do to make sure it is gathering the right information?
Yeah. So one thing people don't look at is after we get the varieties punched in and everything else, check one thing that's really overlooked is your speed source going into your planter monitor. And people don't think about it, but that speed source is what's controlling the rate of the planter, but so what's also controlling your as applied rate, because it's measuring that ground speed. So the kind of the order is GPS, radar, and wheel speed. Wheel speeds last because of slip percentage. So your tractor may say you're moving faster than you really are, and it'll actually show you putting out a higher population.
Got it.
So that's one thing a lot of people don't check is always check your speed source. Even if you don't know it, get in touch with your equipment manufacturer and find out who what it is and make sure that thing is right so you're getting your seeds per acre counted correctly.
So when we talk about the software and what Granular has to offer versus the pen and paper, Tanner, pen and paper's worked for a long time. I know a lot of guys do Excel spreadsheets.
Sure. I've got customers still do it.
But as they move into that, I got to think that Granular ties in not just the important part of the season of planting, but then the spraying and then the harvest afterwards, and you put all that information into one platform that can really analyze it. Robbie, I assume that it does that as a total suite, correct?
Yes. And one thing to think about too is, especially if you're looking at doing trials, so let's say if you want to do fertilizer trials or seed treatment trials, looking at your naming there also in the monitor. So whenever you go at the end of the year and analyzing that harvest data, you can see quickly, did this product work? Did this pay off? How did this go? So that's another advantage over the pen and paper, is being able to overlay the planting data over your harvest data to see spatially, did this pay for itself?
Nice. I mean, I'm going to throw my father-in-law under the bus right now. When you were talking about the item, you know, the order of things to pay attention to this spring, one thing I'm going to add to that is making sure you're on the right field. Because we've done that. We've planted a really large field that was miles apart from each other when we didn't even switch where we were going.
That's one nice thing we do, is we do everything to the field boundary in the system. So even if they don't change it, we're going to put it in the correct field that it needs to be in, because we know that happens. There's a lot to take care of while you're running a planter, and a lot of things get forgotten about before you get 4 or 5 rounds into the field.
Well, that probably yep. alludes right into making changes middle of the year, or middle of the spring even. The software and farm management tools allows you to do that versus going home and doing your spreadsheet. It might not have your spreadsheet with you yep. as you're planting.
Yeah. But no, Robbie, that was a quick chat, and we really appreciate you joining us. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners about making sure their data is ready to go this spring alongside the planter and the tillage equipment?
No, like I said, just the biggest thing is what we talked about. Check that, get your naming down. Remember that it's like we try to talk about people farming data the same way they farm their crop, is you've got to put it in to harvest it out. So if you don't put the data in the monitor, we can't get anything from it at the end of the year. So think about it the same way you're planting.
I like that. I really do. We appreciate you, Robbie. Robbie Weathers with Granular, for joining us during our What's Working in Ag segment. Thank you very much.
Yep, thank you.
You bet, Tanner. Now let's go to our general topic. Have you ever seen that show Mythbusters?
I have. I used to watch that as a kid.
Yeah, they blow stuff up. Man, they would just they test everything. I really like it. And I tell you, that's kind of what we're going to do with our general topic here. And so we have an expert on the line with us today, and we're going to talk about planting today, maybe planting myths. Tell me who we got.
Yes, excited, extremely excited to have Dr. Mary Gums here. She is the agronomy manager for Pioneer Hybrids. She is a Packer fan, a Star Trek nerd, and an amateur nematologist. I don't even know what that is, Dr. Mary, but welcome to the podcast.
All right. Well, thank you. I'm very glad to be here today.
Why don't you share with our listeners a little bit more about your background and let them know who we're talking to today?
Okay. So I'm the Pioneer Agronomy Manager for the Eastern Corn Belt. So I cover Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, and all points north and east of there going out to the Atlantic Ocean. And I work with Pioneer's Field Agronomy Group, and I coordinate all the on-farm agronomy research that we do. So Pioneer show plots that we have, our on-farm research looking at nutrient uptake, hybrid seeding rates, different things that our local agronomy teams are looking at in their areas, like sulfur response or extra potassium response. I work with them to coordinate all those trials, make sure that we have enough locations of them, and then help analyze and write up the data and turn that turn those plots into things that the farmer can do on his farm to make more money.
That's pretty great right there.
Make more money. That's what we're all about.
That's what we're all about. What? So tell me, can I call you Dr. Mary? Is that all right?
Yep, that's
perfect. Dr. Mary. So with the doctor in front of your name, you've had a bunch of schooling in agronomy. Tell me a little more background. How did you get into farming? How are you tied with agriculture? Did you grow up that way? Or
I actually didn't grow up on a farm. I grew up in northern Wisconsin. I had grandparents who farmed out near Grand Forks, North Dakota. And I went to University of Minnesota, not quite sure what I wanted to study. And somebody advised me to take an agronomy class. And it was the most interesting thing I'd ever studied. So I ended up being an agronomist, got my bachelor's degree from University of Minnesota. And then I got a master's and PhD in weed science from Purdue University.
All right. I think you are more than qualified to help us bust some myths today. Are you ready to do some of that?
You bet.
So we have support connection with Granular and Corteva, and came across an article that was published here for this spring that had a couple of things that caught my attention. So let's jump into this myth busting, and I want to focus on corn and soybeans, since a majority of our listener base will plant at least one, if not both, as a majority or main crop that they have. So focusing on soybeans and corn, the first myth that I want to bust is we should always be planting corn before soybeans.
That is a myth. Not necessarily.
Okay.
For a long time, just the conventional wisdom has been plant your corn crop, then plant your soybean crop. And I think the feeling was, you know, we put the time and effort into the corn crop because that's really what we're going for high yields on. And really, in the last 15 to 20 years, our management of soybeans has really improved, and we've really increased the yields we're getting from soybeans. If you look at the USDA yields, average yield on soybeans, since 2013, it's actually tripled its rate of increase. So farmers are looking more at soybeans as a crop that should be managed just as intensely as corn and has the same potential for high yield. What we found in our research is that soybeans respond really well to an early planting date. Really, depending exactly where you are in the Corn Belt, that third week of April is probably going to be the optimum week, maybe going into the first part of May. And planting your soybeans in that window gets you optimum yields. Waiting to plant is going to get you the same type of yield penalties that you might see in corn. So really, you want to look at your field conditions and the weather coming up when you're deciding on your planting date for beans.
Well, that was going to be my next question, Dr. Mary, is if we're not going to go with the standard, I plant my corn first and then plant my beans second, you know, this might have an immediate impact to our profitability and our bottom line right away if we pay attention to something else. So what's going to be key in deciding what I plant first or when?
I would look at the fitness of the seedbed conditions in your field. So as you look at your farming operation and you look at the fields on your farm that you want to plant first, that you know are going to be your most profitable, highest yielding fields that you want to plant first, you're going to want to look at seedbed fitness. How wet is the soil? It doesn't matter if you plant early and do everything else right. If you plant into a cold, muddy seed bed, you are getting rid of any yield gains you might have gained from planting early. So you want to have a fit seed bed, and you want to have good weather for the next 3 to 5 days after planting. So if they're calling for a cold rainstorm to come in, hold off on planting until after that weather front comes through. If it looks like it's going to be a couple of days of nice weather, especially a warming front, go for it.
Dr. Mary, in regards to when we're thinking timeline for first planting date, you know, we ask, is corn first or soybean first? Most of the guys I know, you know, they have a hybrid they use that's a 105-day or 113-day corn or something like that. Is there any difference in the variety that they would plant with soybeans versus corn that would change one or the other planting first?
No, I don't think that there would be a change in corn or soybeans first based on maturity. Really, you want to start with your latest maturity hybrid or soybean variety, plant those first. But as far as corn first or beans first, no, I think that those two can get mixed up pretty well.
So our last conversation, we got really in depth with high speed tillage, the importance of creating a really quality seed bed, and then the advancements in high speed planting. I'm going to make a point that there might be a way to help a farmer become more profitable by investing in a second planter or seeder. So you could start corn and beans at the same time, or hit those optimal conditions, those seed bed conditions, rather than waiting to plant your beans after your corn.
Absolutely.
That makes a lot of sense. And it's no longer we look at see when the neighbor's going. We need to pay attention to what our own field's doing and not just go because somebody else is going.
Right, exactly.
I suppose you think of different soil types, Tanner. As we sell farmland, there are different soil types in every field. And I live on Sandhill Trail, sandy soils, lighter. It's not going to have near the moisture. So what are you telling farmers to do? So we talk about this all the time, Tanner, is farmers need the data to be profitable.
Yep.
Farm for profits, what we're about. You got to have the data and some way to track that data. Is there a way that you see farmers, Dr. Mary, that are doing this, that are keeping up so they can make educated decisions? Because right now we have a great advice. We have great advice for them, but we still have to have some data behind that advice before we can start.
Definitely there are ways for them to be able to look for local data. So the data ahead of time that has been generated so they can make a good decision. We have the granular planting guide this year that lets you go through and pick the state that you're in, and it shows you the results of all of our on-farm trials as to how corn and soybeans yielded based on planting date. So you can look at that as a predictor. And then, of course, there's numerous software programs for you to be able to track that data from your farm, granular being one of the great ways to be able to keep track of your, soybean variety, your planting dates, your soil types, and be able to look at what the best yielding combinations of those things were for soybeans and then also for corn too, obviously.
I think I'll try and get that planting guide link from you, and I'll put that in the show notes with this episode so our listeners can go out there and take a look on a state-specific data.
I think we busted that myth.
I think so. Let's one last question around seed bed preparation. So I remember as a kid, we'd go out to the field and we'd grab the dirt, grab the soil, put it in our hand. And obviously, if we could make a ball, a mud ball that was too wet, is there any other at-home tests, at-home remedies that our farmers could be doing this spring to make sure that the conditions are ready to go?
Yeah, when you do that test, you actually want to make like a ribbon of soil. And that tells you that you've got enough moisture that for good moisture and fast water imbibition by the seed. But you don't want so much water out there that it's muddy and you're going to smear the sidewall and have compaction. So if you can make a ribbon of soil with your hand, that's the way to go. The other great thing to use is just a soil thermometer. Once you know that your field is dry enough, look at a 2 to 4 inch soil temperature and make sure that it's not too cold.
Nice. Well, that's perfect. Let's move on to the next myth, Dave. So I was reading that it might be a myth that planting your corn shallow means that it will emerge faster and attain higher yields.
That is very definitely a myth.
Okay.
Shallow planted corn is the root of a lot of problems that we see in the field. You would think that, okay, I'm planting it closer to the soil surface, it's going to come up faster, everything's going to be good. but it's not, because you're going to end up with the nodal roots being too shallow and not giving enough support to the plant. Actually, if you plant at consistently at 2.5 to 3 inches deep, that's really the depth for uniform germination and emergence. So while the shallow planted corn, the first ones may emerge quicker, if you're planted a little more deeply and uniformly, things are going to emerge uniformly, germinate uniformly and emerge uniformly, and you get that nice picket fence stand. And that's what really leads to higher yields, when you have all those plants starting at the same time and staying at the same growth stage throughout the growing season, so that you don't have runt plants lagging behind that don't get pollinated and just take up nutrients.
Tanner, we talked about this in one of our previous episodes. We talked about high-speed planting. You brought it up earlier. And one of the things that gentleman said, if you are considering your high-speed planter to be high-speed planter, you have to have down pressure. Hydraulic down pressure is what he was referring to. So the equipment that we're using is ever so important to make us more profitable. So when we're talking, maybe a side note here, can buying that new planter make me more profitable?
Oh, yeah.
Based on getting that picket fence perfect 2.5 to 3 inch uniformity, I'm going to argue maybe you should buy that new planter. I mean, saying.
As the banker in the room, it's not that easy. Just saying. No. So, Dr. Mary, then, is it a pretty standard rule across all hybrids and corn and beans to hit that targeted depth? Or would there be a reason we would change to go shallower?
Depending on your soil type, if you have a very crusting type of soil, you may want to go a little bit shallower. If you are having some cooler weather coming up, you may want to go slightly shallower. But by slightly shallower, I mean go to 1.75 inches or okay. So. If it's dry, on the other hand, you may want to be closer to that 3-inch mark. Because you're going to have a higher water content in the soil, just a little bit deeper.
Now you got me wondering, maybe Dr. Mary, you know, Tanner, I don't know the answer to this. Is there a planter that will sense how wet the soil is at the front side of the planter and then automatically change the depth by the back side of the planter?
I don't know if there is one out there that automatically will change the depth, but I know that there's technology available that will take multiple readings of the soil as you go through. Dr. Mary, do you have any insight on what that technology is like?
Right. That technology is the sensor is in the seed firmer. So it's actually after the seed itself has been placed. So it's a great resource for you on the farm to see what your soil moisture was in different areas of the field and compare that to the yield that you get from different areas of the field and what your planting depth ended up being. But no, there's nothing right now that has it on the front side of the planter and then adjusts on the go.
But that would be extreme. That'd be valuable though, too. If we get the data and we find out that, hey, dummy, we're not going to go plant when it's too wet and too cold because it showed up in our maps with the seed firmer data that this didn't work last year.
Correct. That's almost like after the fact that, you know, you did it wrong and now we just got to fix it for next year. So
that's a good point. So in season, Dr. Mary, I'm planting. What are some things I can do to check, or how often should I be checking that my planting depth is accurate?
Yeah. The simplest thing to do is get out of the cab and go dig behind the planter and dig some in each planter unit. And check what your depth is and make sure that it's at the depth you want it to be and that it's planting consistently. I would do that in every new field. When you switch fields, you know, at this beginning, check it. If something happens in the field, like there's a big soil type change, an elevation change or something like that, I'd get out and check it again at those waypoints.
Well, I think we busted that one too, Tanner.
Hey, two down, one to go.
There you go.
What do you think, Dr. Mary? Let's try and bust this third one. I was reading that your seeding rate should never change.
Nope. Yet another myth. Your hybrid choice, your seed bed conditions, and your yield goals will all dictate your seeding rate.
Okay. Can you give us some examples?
Sure. Main one that I deal with a lot is differences in hybrid rate. So we do a lot of population testing with all of our hybrids. And actually, if you go to Pioneer's planting rate estimator tool on our website, you can enter in your hybrid that you're planting and also your seed cost and your anticipated grain price. And we'll tell you what the economically optimum seeding rate is for your yield goal and for that hybrid. It varies from hybrid to hybrid based on the genetics. So we actually have plots out that we look at different field populations and look at what the yield is. So we know optimally what planting rate gets you the highest yield for that hybrid. And then we can go in and adjust for the economics with the seed cost and the planned grain price.
Well, I like the sounds of that as the Farm for Profit podcast. That's what we're all trying to obtain. But how do I trust you? I mean, we had Bodie Kitchell on a little while ago, and he said that, you know, we're being told by seed companies that the potential for corn, the yield potential for corn is 600 bushels to the acre. The soybean yield is over 200 bushels to the acre. And it's always the farmer's fault that we're not achieving those yields because, you know, we did something wrong. We picked the wrong day to plant. We didn't go the right planting depth. We didn't have the right nutrients in the soils, whatever it is. So why wouldn't the seed company tell us to plant more seeds than we need to because it sells more product. Seed and product down the line?
So, well, the first part of that answer is that we do a lot of research on this. We plant a lot of plots to get good data. And we want you to get the maximum yield that you can from our products. That's why we develop these products. That's why we sell them. So we want farmers to be really successful with them. There are products, for example, the P1197 family, which is one of our most popular hybrids. We actually back off on that seeding rate a little bit with that family because it flexes so much. On the other hand, a hybrid like a PO574 family, that's a much more fixed rate hybrid, and you're going to see higher yields if you plant more seeds per acre with that one. So we do want you to be as successful as possible, and so we're going to tell you the best rate to plant for every hybrid that we have.
Tanner, I had a great question follow-up, and it just totally went by the wayside because one of our podcast hosts, Corey, he had a rant a while back about all the different numbers and letters of seed. Is it a P1197 or a P0574?
Growing corn. That was growing corn.
That was growing corn is who it was. Tony Reed. What did he say about that?
Well, he said that if he ever wins the lottery, he's going to buy all of the seed companies just so he can go in and simplify them. The seed hybrid names.
If it's a Pioneer, it's a P with a 1, 2, 3, and yep. That's it. And he just wants to do it that way.
We don't need 11 numbers and letters. We just need 4. And that's how I'll tell my hybrids apart.
No. So I just remembered my question. This is
fire away.
All right. So good segue.
Mental
here.
Exercise.
Yeah. Dr. Mary, is there you've done, it sounds like a lot of seed trials. Do you have an overall just generic off the cuff, you know, low gets better yields, high gets worse yields? Is there like a generic that you can
average?
Blanket put out there?
I would say probably about 32 to 34,000 is the average planting rate across the corn belt.
Okay.
We really tie it into yield goal a lot and your productivity level. And so the average seeding rate, if you're at the 150 bushel yield level, if you're some more challenging soils, is going to be about 30,000 plants per acre. If you're up at the 240 bushel yield level and some really good prairie type ground, it's going to be closer to that 36 or 37,000. So that's the general rule of thumb. Say that, when you have potential for higher yield, increase your hybrid, your seeding rate, and then the genetics plays a big part in how much to increase and the rate that it gets increased by.
It's really fun for me to see our guests kind of bring everything full picture. So we had Jared McDaniel on our last Farm for Fun episode, and we quizzed him about his low pop mafia that he's going about, but he's got some dry land down there in the Oklahoma area and was stating that he finds these hybrids that can flex a little more and then reduces the population on those drier soils to increase his profitability potential. So it's kind of fun to see that the data that you guys are coming up with on the science and research side is matching the data that, for example, Jared, one of our guests, and what Bodhi Kitchell was telling us before, all kind of falls in line. So that, I guess that'd be another reason to validate and believe why you're making the suggestions to the growers that you are.
Right, exactly. And when it comes down to those dry land, more drought type Western Corn Belt acres, on our planting rate estimator, you can select either standard sites or water limited sites. So you can see our planting rate research that we've done on water limited sites and how that changes when water is a limitation. And yes, the recommended populations certainly do go down at that point.
So, Dr. Mary, I think you've already stated it. You said just a second ago that if you know you're going to have really good yields, then you might increase. That would be the time of when our farmers would probably increase their population, correct?
Correct. As your yield goal increases, you're more than likely going to increase your seeding rate.
So it seems like it's all over the board. If you're in Oklahoma, Texas, Iowa, Indiana, et cetera, you really need to pay attention as farmers to what your soil is, what others are doing in your area, not to copy the neighbor. But do you have a recommendation for our farmers? So data is the currency of the internet, is one of my slogans I always say, and data is becoming the currency of farming as well for better farming practices. Is there something that you'd recommend that all farmers do to be more profitable when we're talking soil and seed?
I would say starting with the right yield goal, in addition to doing the right things right at planting, starting with the right yield goal is really key, because that yield goal is going to tell you what you need to do for that crop in terms of how many nutrients it, or what quantities of nutrients it needs. Based on removal, what the potential gain or loss is with a disease or insect problem. And if you can peg everything to that yield goal level, it's going to give you a good roadmap of how to manage that crop. And, you know, I would suggest people look at their yields for the last several years and have you been consistently outperforming your yield goal? Well, maybe it's time to start bumping some nutrients levels and fertilizer rates up a little bit and start going for a little bit higher yield level. On the contrary, if you're not reaching your yield goal, maybe you need to assess the environment and figure out what that rate limiting step is and step back a little bit and get a good profitable crop and then start figuring out what needs to be done to raise the overall yield.
That's a good idea to go back and look at how you have been exceeding or falling short of those yield goals that you put together. Since you do so many trials across the Midwest, if I'm a farmer this spring, and a lot of our listeners are curious individuals, what would make a good trial plot or a good test plot or a way to capture data? Should we be, you know, replicating this time over time in a field? Can we do it in a smaller segment? What's your suggestion if I'm looking to grab some data like this?
If you want to do good on farm data, I would set it up as simply as possible. I would look at one or maximum of two things per field. So maybe you want to split a planter, so you're looking at two different hybrids, and then try, say, a different fertilizer application. So you've got one hybrid change that you're looking at, one fertilizer change that you're looking at. As you plant the field, every time you make a pass, with that split planter, you're making another replication. And so you get the practices replicated across your field, and you kind of minimize the complexity of it. So you'll have good blocks of hybrid one and hybrid two with fertilizer A and fertilizer B. You've got that a couple times in the field. You can see how your results change if your soil type changes. And I think that's a good way to do a plot in your own field.
Well, perfect. Well, thanks for that advice. I think that's going to help all of our listeners, Tanner. There's a whole lot that we unpacked there with just three simple myths.
We just busted three myths.
I tell you, we did. Dr. Murray, do you have any other piece of advice that you would give farmers, our listeners? Not all of our listeners are farmers, but just our listeners in terms of other advice to be successful and more profitable.
I would say remember that planting, it's only one part of the season, but it is the most important part. So look at it as a whole and give your crop the best start that you can. It's not just one of these three things that's most important of planting date, planting rate, and planting depth. It's all three of them together. So maximize all three.
I like that. So I'll give you a little bit of a lead time here, Dr. Murray, as we get ready to wrap up. We really appreciate you joining us and sharing your wisdom. We like to ask all of our guests to think about the common traits that the most successful farmers that you know all have in common. So be thinking about that here as I summarize, and then Dave, I'll have you challenge our listeners this week. So I'll jump in here with a quick summary while you think about that, Dr. Murray. So we had Dr. Mary Gums. She is the agronomy manager for Pioneer Hybrids, and we busted three myths today. The first myth that we busted is that you should always be planting your corn before your soybeans. And really what it comes down to, Dave, is our seed bed conditions need to be right, and we need to make sure that our hybrids are selected to go into those high-yielding fields. We should attack those high-yield opportunities first in the most optimal conditions to make sure we get everything started off on the right spot. I'm going to grab a link to the granular planting guide, so that way we can stick that in our show notes. That's going to help us out a lot, state-by-state information based upon yield compared to planting dates. So that way we can make sure that we're making the right decision as to which hybrid and which seed type gets planted first. Second myth we busted was planting depth. Planting shallower doesn't mean that you're going to have better yielding corn that emerges faster. Sure, it might pop out of the ground quicker, but we may have more risks than rewards with that. So pay attention, make sure our depth is consistent. There may be instances we need to go shallower, but ultimately, trying to stay consistent in that 2.5 to 3 inch range, using the technology that we have to monitor the success that we have in each field, but making sure that we get off the tractor in each field to maintain that uniformity, whether we switch soil conditions or switch soil types. Last myth was seeding rate. Not everything should be planted the same. So that's going to be based upon hybrid differences, soil difference, time of year difference, but really making sure we understand the hybrids that we picked to make sure that we can get that put together. We might be able to back off on some of these hybrids that have the ability to flex, might have to push populations on those that need it to reach that maximum yield potential. But doing the right things right at planting is going to set us up best for that year. What do you think, Dave?
I think that was a heck of a summary of what we talked about. Seems like way more than I thought. I was just enjoying the conversation so much. So I'm going to challenge our listeners as Dr. Mary's still thinking about what the most successful thing that all farmers have in common, their most successful trait. Tanner, I'm going to challenge our people. I heard something from Dr. Mary here that is a takeaway for me, and that was planting is the most important part of the growing season. So when I think of that, I'm going to challenge our listeners and farmers to pay more attention to this part of the season of planting. And moreover, you talked about depth, how deep to go. But another thing I heard from her was those days after you plant are very, very important. And so it could change from your 600 bushel yield to maybe your 200 bushel yield if the conditions aren't right. Right. I think we're so much in a rush as farmers. I see it already. Guys getting their planters out, man, they're getting everything shined up, ready to go. Just because Tanner's going, I got to go. You don't have to go. So right. I'm going to challenge everybody. Here's it is. Pump the brakes. Pump the brakes and do it when it's right so that your yield is that much better rather than just because.
I think that's good. If we can get our listener base to pay extra attention this year, I think that'd be a great challenge. Thank you, Dave, for doing that. So, Dr. Mary, what have you observed in the most successful clients and farmers that you've worked with? Do they have in common? What's a common trait?
I think a common trait is a willingness to consider change. It doesn't mean they're jumping on every new idea or jumping into every new crop, but they're the successful ones are the ones that evaluate their practices and change them where they need to change them and keep them constant where they should be kept constant. But that willingness to change is, I think, the key.
I like that answer, Dr. Mary. Dave always says data-driven decisions. Mm-hmm. So I think that is a great response to that. So listeners, thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining us conversation. Remember, check the show notes for the granular planting guide. Also remember that this is the last week to bid on the Ag Swag auction that we are raising funds for the Travis Burkhart Foundation. So this is the last week for you to do this. And while you're out there, remember to like, rate, and review and share this podcast. And thank you for joining us. And until next time, have a good one.
Remember, if you aren't farming for profit, you won't be farming for long.